Hey, my name is Jason. I'm the producer of Relationship Radio. I wanted to let you know that we have a brand new website solely dedicated to working on your pies. Introducing itstartswithattraction.com. You can listen to every episode, learn about the pies, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Go to itstartswithattraction.com. It starts with attraction, one word, itstartswithattraction.com to get signed up today.
Forbes has come out with a new study about some divorce statistics looking backward into 2020, 2021, 2022, even some of 2023. And there's some pieces in here that I think are interesting to discuss, especially knowing that we love marriage. We're excited for marriage. But a lot of things in here talk about like which occupations are most likely to divorce.
Which age groups. And even a percentage of the likelihood of people who divorce and remarry divorcing a second time, or actually staying married the second time, which is a very high percentage, interestingly.
It is. Mm-hmm. I am just going to go through and point out what I find interesting.
There you go.
Okay, we'll start with that. So as we knew, well, I don't know if we knew this. We knew that about 6 to 7 years after marriage problems begin is when couples typically go and seek help. But according to this recent divorce statistics, or these recent divorce statistics, it says that the average length of marriage prior to divorce is about 8 years. That's a little bit lower than I thought it would be.
I remember seeing a statistic several years ago from the U.S. government that the odds of a woman still being married after 15 years was like 49%, something like that. Now, that's an old statistic. It's from a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's interesting. But here, Kimberly, just remember this. When they start using these statistics, how many states are in the United States of America?
50.
And how many of those states report divorce statistics?
Yeah, 45.
45. And one of the states not reporting divorce statistics is?
California. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Hawaii might be another one. I'm not sure. But the other interesting part of this, because it starts, and we're not covering every single part of this study, but I'm going to point out the parts I find interesting to me. This is 2021 statistics that they gave of divorce rate. We know that in 2020 and 2021, a lot of divorces were backed up because courts continued to be closed. Mm-hmm. So I also wonder if it might be a little bit low in 2021 because of that. But
you always have to look at the environment. Always.
Yeah, it was saying just under 700,000 divorces occurred in 45 states that year. And of course, did not include the state of California.
Yeah, back when they used to do all the states, that kind of thing, the divorce rate in America was a little over a million divorces in America back in those days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we see on average of 8 years before a couple divorces. The other interesting thing, and we've said this on the podcast before, but it's saying it here in this study, third marriages have the highest divorce rate at 75%. And 40% of new marriages include someone who is remarrying. Now, the reason that is interesting, it doesn't say it here, but a person's second marriage has a likelihood of about 65, 68%.
It's about one out of two for the first marriage, about two out of three for the second marriage, and three out of four
for the third marriage.
For the third marriage. That's
so if 40% of new marriages include someone where it's their second marriage, you're already entering into that marriage with a higher likelihood of divorce.
That's correct.
Why?
I think it's because of the fact that once you have made a decision, if I'm not happy, I'm leaving, that making that decision again is easier.
Mm.
Because if you haven't made it before, and now you make it, you've got to consider all kinds of things. Well, what about this? What about that? How will I feel about this? What will I do about that? And people who have been through it, I think, become less afraid of it.
Mm. You know, I'm trying to find exactly where it said that. But one of the things it said in here was that the top issue, here it is right here. It is that the number one cited reason or the most common reason for divorce is lack of commitment.
Yeah, I saw that. I would agree with that. Now, when you start looking at motivations as to why people divorce, we probably look at Gottman's research there about I don't feel you love me, like me, respect me. But when you look at the causes, so commitment then is not a motivation.
Mm-hmm.
A lack of commitment is I'm not going to do what it takes to keep this thing going.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know about the whole world because I don't travel the whole world anymore. You do. You travel the world a lot. I've gotten old enough. I'm pretty happy at home. But in America at least, the idea of commitment to anything has decreased dramatically. Mm. It used to be that people would get a job, they'd stay at that job for their whole life.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And now it's highly unlikely that a person will stay at the same job their whole life. And people used to wind up going to a particular church if they were religious, for example, and that's the church they'd be in unless they moved away somewhere. Now people will switch churches every 2 or 3 years. The commitment to anything, marriage, a school, even commitment to parents or children, has changed dramatically. So in my generation, of course, you know, I'm 149 years old, but in my generation, parents wouldn't think twice about staying together for the children if they felt the children needed them. And our, and the current is that the marriage counselors will often say, don't even think about the kids. You just do what makes you happy. Yeah. And when you live in a world where that is basically an idol worship of me, people worship themselves. What's the old saying? He was a self-made man and worshiped his maker. Okay? That kind of thing. Then it's all about what makes me happy at the moment. And you and I both know a big problem with that.
Oh, yeah. Because whatever makes you happy in the moment is going to change moment to moment.
Everything changes. Nothing is ever the same.
No.
I was trying to explain that to a lady the other day. I said, so for example, I hold your daughter. She said, 20. I said, okay, the emotions you felt the first time you held her in your hands right after the birth, are the emotions you feel toward her exactly the same as those? She said, of course not. Everything evolves, including emotions like love evolve. And so if I'm going to do whatever makes me happy in the moment, no wonder people move from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. One of my friends that I love very dearly, about every 6 to 9 months, as long as I've known her, and I've known her for decades, has changed jobs.
I'm surprised she gets hired.
Me too. Well, she's just really good at what she does. She's really good. I've hired her twice. Okay. And she's awesome. I mean, I love her to death. But it's like something, whatever it is she's looking for, she doesn't find.
Can't get satisfaction.
I don't exactly know what it is, but I know that whatever it is, she doesn't find. But that same kind of thing happens in people who go from one lover to the next, to the next, to the next. Or people go from one marriage to the next, to the next. I remember a lady in one of our workshops, for example, I forget which number she was in, but it was up there. I mean, she'd been married several times. And everybody she had married had been Prince Charming. This is the man. This is who God meant me to be with. Well, she'd been through, again, I don't remember how many, 6 or 7 at that point.
Wow.
Because, well, I thought this is what's going to satisfy me, fulfill me, make me happy, but it didn't, so let me move on. So I would agree. Lack of commitment as being the primary reason, I would wholeheartedly agree. It's not the motivation, but it's lacking the glue that holds it together. In one of my books, I think it was my book, Becoming One, I can't remember the exact statement, but I wrote something like this. Romantic love without commitment is like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. It's very exciting, but it ends badly.
Very badly.
Very badly. You remember, I actually did put very badly at the end of that. You haven't read all my books, have you?
Have I? Not all of them.
No, you haven't.
I know there's at least 2 of them I have not read, but
okay.
Couples who live together, they're more likely to divorce. Now, absolutely. We've known this. But why?
Well, of course, as you know, the research on that's been going on for decades. I tried to explain it to Dave Ramsey once. If you guys have ever listened to Dave Ramsey on the radio, he's that financial guru. I was a guest on his program a few times. And one of the times I was on there, he asked me that question. He said, why? And so I used the language I knew Dave would understand because of his background in real estate and finances. There is a different mindset in renters and buyers. He said, I get it. What did you hear me say? Different mindset in renters and buyers.
Well, that's what I heard you say.
I mean, but what do you think that means?
Oh, what do I? Yeah, the renter, the landlord will fix it. Like, I'll just use this up, use it for everything it's worth. Once I leave, the next person will have to deal with it.
And so I don't have to commit to fixing anything or doing anything.
I'm not
anything.
Here long term.
I can leave and go to another place anytime I wish to.
But these people are wanting to get married. And that's the thing. It's not just people who live together who break up. It's the people who live together, get married, are more likely to divorce. And you're saying it's because they continue to have the renter's mindset because they entered into it so haphazardly.
I'd maybe say it slightly differently, but yes, I think that's basically it. Okay, well, we'll finally get married because we're doing well. But you know, we really weren't officially committed to each other. And now that we are, maybe I'm feeling a little bit trapped.
Yeah.
You know, now I've got to fix the plumbing, or I've got to do this, or I've got to do that, if you use the house illustration.
Yeah.
And I don't want. So yeah, they don't have the same level of commitment. Statistically, that's been evidenced by many research projects over decades.
Yeah. No one talks about it much though.
Not anymore.
No, I was surprised it was in the Forbes article, if we're going
to
be real.
We used to talk about it. It used to be talked about in conventions and things of sociologists and psychologists and marriage therapists. But when it became the American norm, people stopped talking about it because it's like, well, we may offend these folks and, you know, they're the ones who are our clients. So maybe we should just be careful.
We'll just stop talking about the truth.
That applies to all kinds of things.
Not us, I hope.
Not us, never. As a matter of fact, we tell people, we'll tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Even when it hurts. But think about it. How many things that you can't say in public anymore because it'll make somebody mad or offend them, even if it's the absolute truth.
Yeah.
No, no, we don't want the truth. What makes me happy today? And what we keep telling people is, it's probably not what's going to make you happy tomorrow. People need to think longer term. So I agree wholeheartedly. Commitment, the glue of commitment is missing. But that's also why you can't trust what people tell you anymore. It was a time when commitment applied to your word. People would do a business deal with a handshake, literally, and both fulfill their sides of it because your word was your bond. Now it's not at all. You don't know that if somebody's going to do what they say they're going to do or not. Commitment has more or less disappeared from our culture.
We see that in psychology too. They talk about two different eras of marriage and relationships. And in the 50s and 60s, we were in the commitment-based era. And starting in the mid-70s, we entered into the expressive individualism era.
It began changing in the 60s. But yes, by the time we got to the 70s, it was there.
Yeah, which is a lot of these reasons. I wouldn't say even this next one, but another statistic which we could have given them because this aligns with what we see. In fact, our number is a little bit higher. 60% of divorced couples cite infidelity as their reason for divorce.
Two out of three couples that come through our workshop for marriages in crisis, since we started doing that workshop in 1999. So we've been doing that 25 years at the time of this recording.
Yeah.
67%, two out of three couples that show up, at least one. It might be him, it might be her, it might be both.
Yep.
So infidelity occurs. Now, the problem with research on infidelity is whether people will tell you the truth about it or not.
Yeah, we don't know how rampant it is in the general population of marriage, but we can see that 60% of divorces claim that it happened.
But in the general population, one research project will say 20%. The other one will say 80%. Because how truthful are people in the general population going to be? Have you been unfaithful to your spouse? No. And they're lying.
Yeah. Well, and then define unfaithful. Is it right? Could it be that I emotionally was unfaithful, that I sexually was unfaithful? Like, where's the line in between that? So one person may consider.
Oh, yeah. I remember one guy that said, look, it was only oral sex, therefore it was not unfaithful. So they can do all kinds of things to draw that line.
Right. Right. 66% of men and 74% of women think that their spouse should have worked harder to save the marriage.
But we see that in every workshop. We've talked about it before. He's the problem. She's the problem. You fix them. It's not me. And then what do they typically wind up discovering in our workshop?
The lyrics of a Taylor Swift song. It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me.
I don't believe I've ever heard a Forgive Me, Don't Get Angry With Me, but I don't think I've ever heard a Taylor Swift song.
Surely you've heard one of her songs.
I only listen to music from the 60s and 70s.
Well, either way, you're not missing
I call
much.
It classical music.
Either way. I found this, it further, it continues, when a marriage ends, there's often plenty of blame to go around. However, many people believe that they did all they could to save a marriage while believing that their spouse should have worked harder. Mm-hmm. It's a cycle.
But what we know, because we work with thousands and thousands of couples, is doing all they could often means they did the wrong things.
Or they read a book, or they went to a counseling session. Or they asked their spouse, will you go to counseling with me once?
Yeah.
That's all they could do.
Yeah. That's correct. You're right. But we know that people who really want to save their marriages mm-hmm. typically do the wrong things.
Yeah. What are some of those things?
Whine, beg, plead, try to control. One guy told me he made it where financially she couldn't survive without him, therefore she'd have to stay. And all of these are various ways of control. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's guilt. I'm going to guilt you. These terrible things are going to happen to me if you leave, et cetera, et cetera. And by doing all of those kinds of things, they think they're going to stay, when in actuality, they're pushing the person away even faster. We don't have time to explain all of that in this podcast, but we know a lot about that, and we're happy to help you understand why that's the wrong thing to do, to the point that sometimes we actually say to people, stop trying to save your marriage. And they go, what? What? I thought you guys are the ones who want us to save our marriage. Yeah, but not the way you're doing it. So stop. Mm-hmm. Stop trying to save your marriage. Let us show you the right thing to do instead.
Yeah, and that's why we have our 7 steps. Mm-hmm. We have our 7 steps that help people work towards saving their marriage and reconciling. But the first 3 steps of it all have to do with them.
Me.
Myself.
What I need to do.
Stop
doing.
Yeah. For sure. And we have intake specialists that our listeners can call and talk to about how we can help with that. Mm-hmm. You can book that if you're interested by going to marriagehelper.com/book now. Links in the show notes, wherever you're listening or watching this. A couple of other key things I wanted to point out before we talk about why all of this matters. Occupations with highest divorce. And industries with highest divorce, I thought was interesting. Occupations, we see gaming manager. So I'm thinking that's like a casino worker, something like that.
I assume.
Bartender, flight attendant, switchboard operators, telemarketers. So we're seeing people who are working long hours, night hours.
But also people who have a lot of interaction with strangers.
That's very true.
Which means they're meeting all kinds of people. And who knows what intrigue they may feel upon meeting a particular person.
In talking about the industries, though, office and administration industry has the highest divorce rate.
It's also where a lot of affairs begin.
It is, with the receptionist, the...
Or the person in the next cubicle, or the person down the hall, or the person on the next floor. It's because of the fact that affairs, unless it's just purely about sex, if the affairs involve any kind of emotions, it's because you have developed a relationship with this person. Well, working in the same building, on the same floor, in the same office, seeing each other all the time facilitates that being able to occur.
Absolutely. Divorce rates are similar among men and women not in the labor force. So there's kind of a new trend out there that women, when they work outside the home, it might lead to higher divorce rates or unhappier marriages. According to this research in 2022, 21% of divorces involved men not in the labor force, and 22% of divorces involved women not in the workforce. So they were pretty much even, mm-hmm. not quite statistically.
But if they're not in the workforce, they may have less opportunity to meet other people.
Yeah, but these are divorce rates that happened when the partner was. So the other 72% or 78% of women who divorced were working.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. They have more opportunity. But there's no difference in the men and the women.
Okay. I'm not supposed to have a comment about that.
Do you? I don't know. Well,
people will often say, don't men have a lot more affairs than women? And I said, unless it's the same gender affair, you got to have both. And so it wouldn't be that different in the number, unless there's one woman sleeping with 40 men.
Yeah.
Then you would think that their numbers would be pretty similar.
Bill and Melinda Gates' divorce was $76 billion.
Mm.
We could have helped save them a lot of money if they.
We would have done it for half that.
We would have done it. You know what? I would 10%. Let's be generous, Joe. 10% of that. 70% of children live with both parents who are married. 30% of children do not. We know from other research that up to 50% of children, or after parents divorce, after 10 years, 50% of children no longer have relationships with their father.
How many years?
After 10 years.
I thought you
After the first year, it's 25%. And after 10 years, that goes up to 50%.
When you start talking about the fact of why does it matter? Why does it matter at all if a couple stays together? What about an intact family unit? This was several years ago. A friend of mine who is a sociologist attended a meeting in Little Rock. And believe it or not, even by then, the Crips and the Bloods, two of the West Coast gangs, had branches in Little Rock, Arkansas. And there was a guy who had been trying to work with gangsters there, and he actually got the head of the Crips and the head of the Bloods in Little Rock to come to this meeting where all these sociologists were. Now, they, according to my friend, they sat on opposite sides of the stage. They wouldn't even get close to each other. But they had them both mic'd, and they allowed people in the audience to ask them questions. I would have loved to have been there. She said, somebody asked, what would it take to do away with gangs? And you would think that they would snarl. But whichever one, Crip Bloods, whichever one, the guy said, give me a better family. This is the only family I have. Now, people may be thinking, but I'm not worried about my kids getting to that kind of gang. But understand that people are made to be in groups. We are social people. There's the occasional person who wants to be a hermit and live totally by himself. But even many people who want to be alone would rather live in an apartment complex than out in the middle of nowhere. So at least people are around them. We are made to be social people. And we crave having people that we can protect and can protect us, that we can care about and they care about us. And the unit where that's supposed to happen based on nature is having a father, a mother, and children together as a family. Now, people are making all kinds of other families, sometimes because they have to. Like I'm raising my grandchildren because my daughter just abandoned them, that kind of thing. I'm not putting that down. I'm saying if you're doing that, thank God you care about your grandchildren that much. But when it comes to people who are married, and particularly if you have children, if you're thinking, well, they're going to be okay, they will crave family. Unfortunately, it might wind up being a gang, or a clique at school of people that you don't want them to be around, or some other outfit, some cult, some sect, all kinds of things. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to happen to every child. We all know that's not going to happen. But you need to understand that it can, because they crave family. They crave being loved. And so is it worthwhile to figure out how to solve marriage problems and stay together for the sake of the children? Absolutely. And if your counselors tell you that it's not, they don't read the research. The research is ample. Kids crave it. The biggest fear a child will have is losing a parent. So there's a reason for people to get married. There's a reason for them not just to live together and have children. There's a reason so the kids know you're committed to be here with me, legally, morally, ethically, spiritually, every other way.
A lot of times people feel like there's no hope if they're headed for divorce and that they can't do anything. Even this Forbes study says that when couples divorce and do, even after couples divorce, if they were to remarry, which is low, only about 6% of divorced couples tend to get remarried, which I would like to think Marriage Helper has made a dent in that 6%, like helped increase it.
We helped them.
But when this occurs, there is a 72% of them chance of them remaining married. They have a super high success rate.
Staying together, super low chance of divorcing again. Now, might they? Sure. But the odds are very, very low. As some people who watched our podcast know, I actually divorced my wife back in 1984. And then we remarried in 1987. And we are happily married to this day and will be until death. And so I look at that statistic and say, yeah, that's right. Because if you can put it back together and solve the problems, there's not much that's going to take you apart.
We believe that there's always hope.
Always.
That nothing is unrecoverable. and that there is a step forward for people to take, no matter if you're divorced, separated, or just feeling like it's hopeless in the current situation. But we can help you move forward. You can speak with one of our intake specialists going to marriagehelper.com/book now. You can book a call. It's a free call with one of our intake specialists who will help understand where you are, what your goal is, and how Marriage Helper can help you get there. Because that's our goal, to help you save your marriage. And we would love to make that happen. This isn't supposed to be depressing. It's supposed to shed some light and some truth on what's happening with divorce. But at the end of the day, you have the ability to do something to change your future, whether it's for you having a better future, no matter what happens, but ultimately, hopefully to save your marriage. We believe that there is hope, and we hope we can help. Until next week, there is always hope.